The reading given to me by one of our guest ministers is titled, The Goddess Dances the World Awake, a creation story retold by Starhawk. Long ago, before anything was, the goddess awoke alone in the vast emptiness. She had as yet no name, no form, but she felt an urge to move. She stretched, she rocked, she began to dance. Whirling, twirling, she wheeled and spiraled through space. Her dance set a motion of a great wind that followed her. The wind was playing catch, trying to caress her. The goddess danced with the wind. Then the wind took form, becoming a god in the shape of a serpent named Ophion. Ophion wrapped his coils around the goddess, trying to become one with her, loving her with all his being. Suddenly, the goddess felt something stirring inside her. Was it another urge to dance? Oh God, it was something about to be born. She reached out, and her arms became wings. As a giant bird, she flew aloft, while Ophion coiled himself into a nest for her. She settled onto his back and laid a huge, huge egg. Then Ophion guarded the egg, sheltering it from below as the goddess brooded over it from above. At last, the egg cracked open, and the whole universe fell out. Suns, stars, galaxies, planets, moons, and the green living Earth all spiraling through space. So that's how the world came to be, according to the media controlled by the 1%. And the whole universe, still spiraling and spinning, whirling and twirling to this every day in the dance of life.
Good morning, everyone. So this is a story I adapted from the one told by Jennifer Reif in her book, The Mysteries of Demeter. The maiden Kore play with the daughters of Oceanus as her friends and handmaids in the fields of Thessaly, searching for purple lupines, crocus, and narcissus to make sacred wreaths to be worn by the maiden and her handmaids of the sacred dance. Demeter, the goddess of the grain and harvest, smiled as her daughter of spring danced with the handmaids, bringing forth life to the verdant and rich spoils of the land. Kore and her handmaids, tired of their exertions, and rested in a sweet meadow near Nysa, where the sea lapped at the shore, lulling them to sleep. As they dreamed and slept, they dreamed of new life. The grasses grew more emerald, flowers burst forth, and the orchards became verdant with blossoms and the promise of sweet, sweet fruit. As time progressed, the plains of Nysa grew more and more golden with the ripening grain, and the only flowers left in the meadow were the red poppies. Kore and the daughters of Oceanus partook of the ripened fruit of the orchards, and once again they danced the sacred dance and offered their songs in reverence to Delphi's Gaia and Kore's own mother for such a rich offering of grain and fruits of the land and for the care of the people that lived there. They made garlands and wreaths of blood-red poppies in honor of Demeter, and they lay in the golden grasses on fine woolen hymations, which is a type of shawl, drifting off into a deep, deep sleep. While the daughters of Oceanus slept the deepest of slumbers, Hecate made herself known to Kore. She came to her in a dream and allowed her to hear the mournful, deep, rumbling song of Hades, the god of the underworld. She allowed Kore to see Hades sitting on his obsidian throne and allowed her to see the tears behind that sad song. Hecate showed Kore the silver and ebony throne that sat empty next to Hades, with a silver crown entwined with all the earth's precious stones. He was father to none, but to many he was the king of the dead, and responsible with not only death, but the judgment that came along with it. He was weighted. Kore felt nothing but sadness for Hades, and wanted to do nothing but ease his pain and bring light to the darkness that he resided in. She reached out to caress a tear from Hades' cheek, but woke with a start to find the daughters of Oceanus gone and herself alone with Hecate. Hecate, the goddess of the crossroads and magic, told her she had a choice. She could accept her destiny and bring light to the heart of Hades and justice to the underworld, thus also teaching men suffering. Or she could continue down her current path, but she would never grow in power, nor would she ever change. Kore heard Hades' voice in her head, and he whispered the name, Persephone. 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 And that is how she made her decision. She knew that she was destined to be the queen of the underworld as Persephone, and bring light and justice to the darkness. She made her choice. Hecate nodded. And at that moment, the plains of Nyssa began to burn with the promise of fertility from the ash. The blood-red poppies seemed to grow even redder as they disappeared into the flames. The earth rumbled, and there came forth Hades in his chariot, bedecked with many precious metals. Hades, proud and tall, stood in the chariot, controlled by his black-as-pitch stallions. He reached out his hand to Kore, and she took it. And as she did, she tossed her wreath of poppies from her head into the fire, and thus found herself transformed into Persephone. She now wore a beautiful silver and gold loose Grecian gown called a chiton, bedecked with all the precious stones of the earth, and found the silver crown she saw in her dream upon her head. Together they descended into the underworld, destined to become man and wife, king and queen, light and dark, bringing balance to a place where there was none. The sacred pomegranate trees of the underworld burst into bloom at the arrival of the new queen, as did the red roses and ethereal lilies. After her period of mourning, which is an entirely different story for another time, Demeter, the goddess of the earth and grain, joined with the god of wine and theater, Dionysus, the mother goddess of the earth, Gaia, Aphrodite, the goddess of love, and the goddess Hecate, to embrace her daughter Persephone and her new role as queen of the underworld and goddess of justice. Persephone asked her mother now, seeing that she was happy, could she please restore the earth to a place of growth and abundance? Demeter stated, no, she could not. She could not do so without the help of the sacred maiden Kore, who was at this time no more.
Well, good morning. It's wonderful to be back at Fullerton. Good to see everyone this morning. And we are giving you the full goddess this morning. You're getting a good dose of her. The night I attended my first covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans, or CUPS ritual, it was a fall evening, and I was smitten by the beauty of the altar, the intensity of the incense, and lyricism of the language. But to tell you the truth, I don't remember everything about that evening. For several days, though, I was so struck I could barely speak. I was also smitten with the beauty of the goddess energy, as I experienced it through that ritual. Since that ritual 21 years ago, I have attended and led many, many rituals, and each one has spoken to me in a slightly different way. There are probably some folks here today who identify as pagans. I won't out you, okay? But we're kind of everywhere. Or people who practice some type of earth-based religion. And I see a lot of parallels between my Unitarian Universalist brothers and sisters and my pagan brothers and sisters. Partly it is our diversity, not so much in our theological beliefs, but in our respect for the individual's thinking ability to put together their own theology. I've attended rituals of Druidic groups, rituals with Dianic groups, who were women-only events. Some of those got pretty wild, I have to say. Some of those were some of the lightning rituals I've been to. I've been to rituals led by groups that focus on the balance between male and female, symbolized by the god and goddess during the ritual. I've attended rituals that honor one goddess or one god, or the four directions, earth, air, fire, and water. I have friends who are pagan atheists and believe that we will simply go back to the earth and be bug food when we are done. If you ask a pagan what their theology is, you'll hear as many answers as you hear from Unitarian Universalists when you ask the same question. Today we honor the divine in the form of Demeter and her daughter Kore and the god Hades. Most of us are polytheists, and we can honor the divine in many different gods, goddesses, spirits, and animals, in this world and in others. My own practice as a pagan has changed into a shamanic-style meditation work, but it is still ritual-based at times. I'll be happy to talk more about my own practice after the service. I'm also a bit of a Unitarian Universalist Seven Principles and Six Sources junkie. For those of you who are new to Unitarian Universalism, these are the seven ethical principles that bind us together, all of us in this room, as a faith, and the six sources of religious and secular wisdom that we draw from as Unitarian Universalists. As part of our worship time with you, we have invited all of you into this, our time of sacred space together. We hope to provide a glimpse of the goddess and to hold up just a few of the ties that link Unitarian Universalism and paganism. Our UU seventh principle calls us to have respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Our Unitarian Universalist six sources ask us to affirm and promote the spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred cycle and circles of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. We'll go back to our story of Kore. We left at the cliffhanger. Here we go.
Hera, the queen of all the gods and the goddess of marriage, appeared then in the underworld in her great peacock chariot, driven by lions, and offered a solution. Persephone could return to the surface world as Kore for 6 months of the year to do the work of the fertile maiden, and then descend into the underworld for the rest of the year as the queen of justice. Hades looked to his bride and told her that while he deeply loved and adored her, the choice was hers and hers alone, and he promised that he would not mourn, but remain steadfast in his love. And in fact, Hades was the only god that remained steadfast in his love. So look at Zeus. That's a whole other story. Persephone agreed and thus became again the catalyst for balance, both on the surface and beneath. In her silver crown appeared a pomegranate centerpiece. Within it shone six perfect blood-red garnets, each representing the months that she would spend in her underworld kingdom. A great feast was held after Hera performed the sacred marriage. Aphrodite offered blessings of love and passion, presenting Persephone with a girdle of pearls. Hecate offered blessings of sanctity and a gift of a crown of roses and myrtle to the bride. Dionysus offered abundant wine to drink. Gaia offered divine ambrosia, and Demeter holy grains from the surface. The sacred marriage was complete. Every 6 months, Persephone would drink from the river Lethe to hold back her memories of the underworld and to rise to the surface again as Kore. Zeus the king of all the gods, would herald her arrival with lightning and rain, allowing the ground to soften and the gift of water to soften the soil in preparation of the coming earthly fertility. Upon her return, she would drink from the spring of Mnemosyne and regain her memories and transform again to Persephone, joining her husband as the queen of the underworld and the goddess of justice.
Well, we promised some words about how being a pagan can move someone to action in the larger world. All this ritual is great, but you know, if it gets too inward, it doesn't translate out into the larger world. So I am going to reshape this into a more specific question. How can one's pagan theology translate into action to protect Gaia, the earth, and that interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part? Along with the activists of all beliefs, many pagans have been at the forefront of earth justice movements. UU Margot Adler was a well-known pagan writer, a longtime activist who worked for social change on many fronts, as well as serving as a reporter for National Public Radio. So you may remember, for those who are NPR fans, as many UUs are, hearing Margot Adler's story. She passed away a couple of years ago. She was also one heck of a chant leader. I'm not going to quit my day job to be a singer, you guys. I decided that this morning. So, but boy, Margot, I was lucky enough to go to two of her chant workshops where she had 200 people in a huge ballroom chanting for an hour in multiple parts. And it was truly one or two of the most inspirational times I've had in a pagan group. It was just incredible. It was transformative for me. As the time grows later to save our planet from the damage of carbon emissions, I feel called into deeper work to save humanity from rising temperatures and sea levels. This crisis is already causing massive problems around the globe and changes to weather patterns and causing problems. The living goddess, our Gaia, demands immediate changes to our consumption patterns and habits, particularly in our Western nations. This is one area where true climate science and paganism agree 100%. One of the great misconceptions around paganism is that it is not compatible with science. Science and paganism walk hand in hand in many ways. In fact, one of my good friends teaches physics, who is also a pagan. With a different understanding of space and time, identified by quantum physics, many pagan beliefs no longer seem so far out as they did just a little while ago. I personally believe that ritual, like meditation, has been proven to beneficially change brain patterns and can move people to positive action. And there's been a lot of work with MRIs to watch people's brains as they meditate. So there's a whole bunch of research on that now. Right now, we still experience the cycle of the seasons on most of the continents of our planet. But we are seeing the results of global warming right here, right now, even in Orange County. Changing hearts and minds on all levels will take creative storytelling and huge changes in our own Western mythologies around individualism and prosperity. A global society that caters to a few obscenely rich individuals and allows them to hoard the world's resources needs some new stories around what will constitute success and prosperity. Or perhaps a revival of the old stories about the cycles of change. One way to change our stories is to introduce sacred ritual into more folks' lives. Ritual will not speak to everyone. It's not everybody's cup of tea. But for some, it moves hearts and minds. Pagans are people who hold ritual at their core. We love our ritual. Who better to help change a society toward earth justice when logic and statistics have often failed to move hearts towards an ethic of caring? New stories and new creative energy that works with the gods, goddesses, and spirits can continue to provide a different vocabulary and help energize the conversation around environmental work. At this 11th hour, all of us are needed to help humanity help ourselves and keep us in a sacred balance with what is now life and death as we hurtle along in our little solar system, in the Milky Way, on our Gaia.
I first met the Greek gods when I was in junior high school. It was part of my English curriculum. I was fascinated with the stories of the gods and goddesses, the heroes and heroines, whose stories became the theology of the ancient Greek people. I have since done a lot of study in classical mythology and have based my own theology around it. The irony of presenting a goddess story on Father's Day is not lost on me. It really isn't. Hades is the father, though, for me, whom I know I will meet at my end, who loved the maiden so deeply and so purely he was willing to be without her for half of the year. Hades was the most loyal of the male gods, as I've mentioned. He was the only one to never have children outside of his marriage. Can't say the same for Zeus. And Persephone was his equal, completely, 100%, and his only love. Now, as Raina mentioned about the ecological problems that are facing our planet, pagans are very in tune with that. Those that are woke to the changes and damage to our planet, that our planet has occurred and incurred because of our own hubris, are seeking some hope, some beauty, some joy. For me, this is searching for Persephone. I know that she can create life, but I also know that she's one of the gatekeepers of death. She can guide my soul as both a creator and destroyer, and through this, I will learn our pain and minister to it. Now, I'm a panentheist. I believe that the divine pervades and interpenetrates every part of the universe and extends beyond time and space. If you ever read the works of Alfred Noble Whitehead, did I say that right? Yeah. If you ever read Whitehead's theology, it's process theology, and this falls right into that. And Whitehead was a mathematician and considered himself an atheist. When I first attended a Unitarian Universalist church as a parishioner, I was entranced by the idea of a faith that embraces all and subscribes to no creed. I wondered how I could fit into such a faith. I read the essay called Nature by the Unitarian minister Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, "Nature is made to conspire with spirit to emancipate us. The happiest man is he who learns from nature the lessons of worship." This was my niche. Emerson was a leader of a movement called the Transcendentalists, a belief that developed in parallel to Unitarianism, where emphasis was placed on the perception and intuition rather than objective observation. The Transcendentalists believed that the more we experienced life and the natural world around us, the more that we would grow spiritually. This aligned perfectly to my own earth-based spirituality, and as Raina mentioned, is one of our six sources of Unitarian Universalism. Emerson also wrote, "But if a man would be alone, let him look at the stars. The rays that come from those heavenly worlds will separate him and vulgar things." When I was a child, my family would often take trips to Sequoia National Park. It was here that I had my first experience with what I would consider the divine. We would lay on the blacktop of the auxiliary parking lot of our campground on beach towels and look up at the sky. This is at 10,000 feet. Every star in the universe seemed to wink at me. And I could actually see the planets, constellations, and the Milky Way without the aid of a telescope. I felt so minuscule, so tiny and insignificant. I could feel my place in the web, and it was here I first experienced my perception of the feminine divine. The seventh principle, as Raina mentioned, of Unitarian Universalism is respect for the interdependent web of all existence to which we are a part. I've discovered
that what is needed is a seeking of spiritual balance. I think we all need to acknowledge our place in this sacred web, and we need to embrace and accept the challenges of change like the maiden Kore did in the story that I told. And then perhaps then, and only then, will we find our divine perspective. Will we find our own Persephone?